And with that, we are going to move to item 18, Prairie Dock Update.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, and Secretary Roebling. My name is Mark Ohm. I'm the Wildlife Regional Supervisor out of Chamberlain. For the presentation today, I also have my online secret weapon by the name of Mike Lasowski. If he's on, I'll let him introduce himself as well, but make sure his audio is working.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioner, Secretary Roebling, Mike Lasowski, Regional Wildlife Supervisor out of Rapid City. And that is the first time in my life I've ever been called a secret weapon, so thank you, Mark.
fair warning, I've had a little extra caffeine and a lot of extra sugar, so if I start moving too fast, somebody just throw something at me. If you use your coffee, avoid the face, please. Thank you. So today we're talking prairie dogs. Going to go through a little bit here on how we assist producers, really what measures we use, what guidelines we use to determine if somebody is eligible for our assistance, what this means for our budget, what budget trends are looking like, and then what we see for effectiveness and best practices, both for us, our staff, and for the landowners. So we'll go ahead and get started here. Why do we do this? Why do we do what we do? First of all, there are state laws that require us to do this, in addition to us wanting to assist landowners out there. State law does require us to do several things. One, develop a state prairie dog management plan, which was adopted in 2005. We'll touch on that a little bit. It also requires that we have a control program at state expense for prairie dog towns that are encroaching on private ground from contiguous public lands. And finally, there is another law stating basically the same thing, that we will establish a program to continue prairie dog control on private lands. So why are all these in place, particularly the management plan? In the late 90s, there was a petition to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to list prairie dogs on the Endangered Species Act. Management plans were established in many of the states where prairie dogs are prevalent to preclude that listing. So what does our prairie dog management plan do? It has two primary goals. First is to preclude federal listing. We want to manage for long-term self-sustaining prairie dog populations. While we're doing that, we want to avoid negative impacts to landowners. We don't want to see these prairie dogs expanding onto private property, causing negative impacts where people don't want them. That is going to be the focus for this conversation today. So, how does a producer get help? Starts out pretty simple. There's an online registration. Landowner can get on. It's really name, contact information, where your property is, quick description of the prairie dog town, and how close it is to the nearest public ground. Once you've registered for that, registration should be done before August 15th. That gives our staff time to go out, do a field evaluation, do an on-site mapping, and get an idea of how many prairie dogs are in each town. Once we have all those mapped and located and determined that they are eligible for our control, we collaborate with the public land partners where those prairie dogs are encroaching from. A lot of times these are coming off of federal properties, state properties, other state properties that Game Fish and Parks doesn't own, school public lands, things like that. We're going to control the private property areas on all of those. Those entities are going to control prairie dogs on their properties. So it takes a lot of coordination and collaboration in the planning stages. Once that's done, we go out, hire contractors to do this. There used to be, when there was fewer prairie dog towns that we were managing, we were doing controls in-house. Our own staff was licensed to do the controls. Now that we're acres are creeping back up. There's just too much for us to do, so we contract that out. Average cost per acre is running about $19 to $25 per acre, depending on location and which specific contractor is able to get to that. So it gets expensive in a big hurry. Once contractors are on standby, they start treating mid-September usually, which is why that August 15th date is so important. We need to have that stuff done ahead of time. They will treat as long as they can going into winter, as long as the weather is conducive to it. They're going to treat until they're done or the weather shuts them down. Then after treatment, Game Fish and Parks will go back out, do some spot checks, remind the producer to keep an eye on it if they need to sign up again for follow-up control the following year, a reminder to do that as well. So what do we look at to make sure that a landowner is eligible for this? Really three different things. Prairie dogs must be coming off of adjacent public lands. That could be, like I said, game production areas, school and public lands, BLM, Forest Service, grasslands. It really doesn't matter. Things that we don't treat for is if they're coming off of tribal property or anything else that's not truly a public property. The colony must occur within 1 mile of the public land boundary, and the colony size must be greater than 10 acres on the private ground. So on the screen you can see a couple of examples. The outlines there are the mapped prairie dog towns. The top example, the blue is public ground, the green is private. You can see that we've got about 70, 80 acres or so there total. Clearly mixed between the two, public and private ground. We're going to treat that one without a problem. The bottom one's a little trickier. You can see we've got 170, 180 acres of prairie dog town there. Part of it is within 1 mile of public ground, but you'll notice there is no prairie dogs on the public ground. We can't say that that is encroaching off of the public ground. We are likely not going to treat that on our own cost. We will still provide technical assistance on that, help them get the bait and pre-bait and so forth. So we do try to hold to these guidelines as well as possible. Sometimes it's hard to say. Sometimes there has been historical towns on the public ground. We're going to take that into account as well. So, how treatment is applied. Typically we use zinc phosphide treated oats when we're controlling prairie dogs. That requires a Category 12 pesticide license, so not anybody can just go out and throw bait around. It requires at least two visits to the site. First is going to be a pre-bait, where you put 1 teaspoon of pre-bait oats, untreated oats, on each prairie dog hole. Guys are driving around with a ATV. There, you can get automatic baiters, automatic dispensers, but a lot of times they're just using a hand, putting half a handful out or something like that in each hole. A few days later, after that pre-bait has been eaten, you go back and apply another teaspoon of the actual treated oats. At that time, any livestock out there has to be removed by the labeling requirements on the bait. And then once that's gone, we come back and do some spot checks. So we'll get into that a little bit here too, but excuse me. As I said, the acres that we've been treating has been steadily going up. If you, on the graph, you can see back in 2007, 2008, that was the recent, most recent highs, was about 25 to 26,000 acres of prairie dogs treated in those years. 2024 was the highest since 2008, 2009, with 16,500 acres treated across western South Dakota here. Most of that was on private ground. I believe it was 12,960 acres was on private ground. The remainder was on public ground that we treated, or that was treated by the public entity that manages that area. So I would assume with the dry weather and forecasts that we have coming, that those acres, those requests for service are going to continue to rise here this coming year. Budget implications. Obviously, with more acres, it's going to cost more. We had a total of 132 requests for services, or requests for service last year. Of those 132 requests for service, I believe 117 were actually treated. The remainder either did not fit into the schedule for some reason, weather didn't cooperate, or there was some other reason, and we will be revisiting those this coming year. You can see this has been the highest year for total cost in quite some time. We spent $381,500 on prairie dog control. Now, that was just on either private ground or on game fishing parks on the ground. Forest Service, National Park, school and public ground, or school and public lands, all pay for the acres of their own that are treated on their properties. So cost per acre, we've seen a steady increase in that as well. We actually plateaued a little bit from last year at $29.44 per acre average. Compared to 1987, it was under $8 an acre. So costs have really, really gone up. And I would anticipate those continue going up. Labor costs are going up. Fuel costs are going up. Everything that goes into this program, costs are increasing on an annual basis. So results. The way we kind of do that, we do an annual spot check, random spot check on a handful of different prairie dog towns where we've treated. The way we handle that, staff goes out pre-treatment and kind of takes a survey, how many prairie dogs are they seeing, what kind of density are they seeing there. After treatment, they run the same survey, determine a rough percentage of kill with that treatment. We also listen to the landowners on what they're seeing. They're out there way more than we are, so we want to take their views into account as well. They report very wide gaps in success, everything from almost no kill to almost 100% kill. It can be, really comes down to a lot of different reasons for that. Weather plays a huge reason or a huge influence. The people applying the bait, if they do something different on one town than another, that can cause a huge influence. And then landowners, what they're doing on the land at the time of treatment can also have a big influence on how these results are taken. And so what we recommend for landowners as best practices to get the best treatment, remove all livestock several days before the planned control efforts. We really recommend no shooting or harassment of prairie dogs at least 30 days prior to and during control efforts. We want those prairie dogs as calm and as relaxed as they can be. So they're going out of their holes, they're eating that pre-bait, they're feeding, they're ready to go. No other poison or control efforts at least 6 months prior to game fishing parks control. And then we really recommend skipping years. For example, Fish and Wildlife Service, they will only treat 3 out of every 5 years. And that's really to keep prairie dogs from getting bait shy. I think the best analogy I've heard so far is if somebody gives you a cookie that makes you sick but doesn't kill you, you're not going to eat the rest of that cookie. You want to make sure that they don't remember that they're eating that bait as much as possible when you give it to them. And then for follow-up, modify grazing practices, if possible, to reduce expansion of that colony. And then for any colonies that don't qualify for game fish and parks assistance, we would recommend that they consider private control of those to avoid expansion off of those back into the areas that we've controlled. Some other treatment options do exist. Like I said, zinc phosphide is what we typically use. It's relatively inexpensive at about $80 for a 50-pound bag. It has a greatly reduced chance of secondary or non-target poisoning. Very simple to apply, no required follow-up visits or inspections. Some other options out there include Rosol. It is significantly more expensive. It is $160 a bag. Like I said, average cost or average contract price for the zinc phosphide is $19 to $25 per acre. We have gotten some bids for Rosol. Those have varied from anywhere from $60 to $100 per acre because there is a lot more that goes into administering that. It has a high chance of secondary poisoning. Basically, you have to go out and any prairie dogs that you find that are dead, you have to bury those. They can't be exposed or they can't be left out. And application and inspections are much more time consuming. Kaput is another one, very similar to Rosol. And then Fostoxin is very labor intensive. It's something that people use if it's a very small town. It's not something that you would want to use on a large scale. It would be very difficult to do. Any questions? That's really what I've got for you today. I'd be happy to take any questions, or if you can stump both Mike and I, there is a undetermined prize for anybody that can do that.
Any questions from the commission? I do have one, and you kind of touched on this, but I just, when we talk about those, the prairie dogs that are coming from public lands, and you mentioned the federal government, how much do they participate in paying for this?
They do not pay for anything on the private ground. It is a state statute that we will pay for that. They do pay for any control on their own property. I might have to ask Mike what their policy is. They do not control the entire town on their property. They usually go a certain distance from the fence line, from the property line. You remember what that is, Mike?
Yeah, the federal government does a buffer on their properties. So just as Mark had mentioned, they pay for the acres on those properties. But, for example, the Forest Service will do a half a mile onto their property typically. They at times will go a little further. Forest Service has been pretty good to work with. So there's assistance there for sure. On national parks, it gets to be a little bit more challenging, especially Badlands National Parks, where you have black-footed ferret populations. You're looking at a buffer there of maybe 100 feet to up to a eighth of a mile, roughly. So a little bit more challenging there to get treatment out onto that federal property. And then the Bureau of Land Management does not allow any sort of treatment on their property. So that gets to be challenging year after year, because you'll have a 160-acre colony. You know, 80 of it is on BLM and 80 of it is on private. You'll treat the private, but you can't get over there to treat the public. And as we would know, that those prairie dogs are just simply going to repopulate that private land, and it isn't going to take very long. Something also to mention, too, you know, when it comes to success of poisoning prairie dog colonies utilizing zinc phosphide or any other poison for that fact, there's really no silver bullet. There's a lot of challenges with it, and Mark covered it really well. There's a lot of different variables in there. A lot of times some of that stuff can be out of our hands, whether it's weather or some sort of activity out there. But looking at some of the literature, you're looking at, if you don't get a complete kill at some point on a prairie dog colony, you're looking at repopulation of that colony in 3 to 5 years, roughly. So it's going to kind of be a pretty consistent challenge. So I think in visiting with our staff, we're looking at about 60 to 75% success when we do our spot checks. But just as Mark mentioned, some of them, there's really no change. We can't figure out why there's no change in that situation. And then in other situations, you have close to 100%. So A lot of variables there. And then one last thing real quick, just a quick shout out to staff that help out with this program. Ryan DeFore out here in the Rapid City office, one of our resource biologists, he does a really good job of making sure getting back to producers and getting out, mapping. We have a number of interns that help out with this every summer. It's one of those duties that there's not a lot of bells and whistles, so I really appreciate his hard work and positive attitude and leadership when it comes to this program.
My other question is, are there certain elements, the weather or whatever, that would help increase a population of prairie dogs?
Yeah, and typically dry weather, you're going to see increases. Anything that keeps grass levels or grass heights low, so heavy grazing can also increase prairie dog populations, or at least allow them to expand more easily. My understanding is prairie dogs typically don't like not being able to see, so they like short grass prairies. They like to keep that grass short around their burrows so that they can see predators approaching. So that's, from my experience dealing with this for a while now, that's when we see those towns really expand.
Okay. Commissioner Locken.
Yes, Commissioner Locken here. Are you hearing any reports on the plague getting into prairie dog towns recently?
Yeah, good question, Commissioner Locken. We have had some reports in some areas. I know Fish and Wildlife, or Forest Service on Fort Pierre National Grasslands reported some last year. I don't believe it was very widespread at this time. But plague is definitely a concern with very dense populations. And that's something that the last time that we had very high populations, that's really what knocked it back.
Badlands National Park also had a pretty significant outbreak here this last year, and they've been working with staff out there to do some treatments to kind of sort of curtail that issue. The big issue, of course, out there in Badlands National Park is the black-footed ferret population that's out there, and a significantly imperiled critter. But that has also had a pretty significant effort with that.
Very good. Any additional questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Bartling.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Bartling here. Mark, can you tell me, do you run into any problems with keeping control, if I can say it that way? There's a number of, I guess, individuals who like to commercially allow people to come in and commercially shoot those prairie dogs. Does that in any way cause a problem as far as trying to keep control when you're trying to curtail it from public land onto other private land? And then my second question, if I might, Madam Chair, is do you pretty much just contract out the services for poisoning and whatnot, or do you have a handful of staff that does that as well? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair. Yes, good questions, Commissioner Bartling. First, there are some folks out there that conduct some commercial hunting operations for prairie dogs. In the areas that I cover, I have not seen that be a problem because they're typically not close to the public land. Or if they are, the folks doing the commercial hunting aren't requesting services. If they're allowing their prairie dogs to encroach onto their neighbors, then that's a issue between those two neighbors, not us. As far as who's doing the treatments, yes, in the larger areas, it is typically all contracted. However, in Region 2, we have kind of some outlier towns that the contractors would have to travel right of ways for. So we do still had staff doing some of the treatments on our own. Region 2 was by far the smaller task this year. I think we had about 1,100 acres that we treated in Region 2 on private ground. The remainder was in Region 1. Of those acres, I believe close to 200 were treated by staff. The rest was contract.
Commissioner Bartley, any follow-up questions? Very good.
No. Thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
Very good. Thank you for pulling this together. I know we had a request from Commissioner Beast during our last meeting, so thanks to you and your team who were able to do that. We're going to go to 19.